Welcome to the GBC Big Three Podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and joined by the better part of the Big Three trio. Here I am with Jessica Baker.
The better part.
Did you like that?
Bless you. I loved it. You know, I am. Yes, correct.
Welcome, my dear friend. How are you going?
Yeah, I'm good. Yep. I'm good. Just same.
Yep. Just here for another day of the Big Three, which I just love.
Yeah.
I love the enthusiasm.
Yep. Very good.
Listen, today, I mean, we'll get into it a little bit more, but we are talking about teams. We're talking about being on mission. So I just wanted to get a little opening story from you, Jess, about a time that you've been on a team, craziest story from a time that you've been on a team. Just kind of, you know, give people a taster for what we're going to be getting into later on.
Yeah. Well, initially my mind went to our high school Oztag team, Jakey and the Doodle Bears.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no, it was Jakey and the Divas, and then the next year we were the Doodle Bears.
Yeah, lovely.
There were other guys in the team, but Jacob just needed to be singled out. But talking about,
he's the hero we need.
Yeah, he hated it so much. But ministry, bless. I remember a time at my old church, Bankstown Baptist Church, when I was like, I would have been like 16 or 17. Look, I have many gifts in this world. Well, I wouldn't say many, just a few, just a handful. Singing is not one of them, but I like a microphone.
Yes.
I like being up the front, and I'm willing to give everything a shot. And so
Someone say that's a gift.
Yeah. One week I decided to join the worship team. Oh, I can't even.
I already love this story because it's just 1 week, which already foreshadows the duration of your involvement in this ministry.
They did not ask me back. They did not ask me back. So I signed up with my best friend who also couldn't sing but could sing a little bit better than me.
What a duo.
For Bodes, the actual performance, when at rehearsal the worship leader said, Jess, could you sing on key?
Yes.
I actually can't. Like, I'm not trying to sing on key. But anyway, we were singing one of my favourite songs, Take It All.
Take it all.
A classic. And obviously we all know the bridge. Run into the one who sees the light. Follow when the, you know, that one, that bit.
Everyone just needs to know that Jess just busted out into actions.
Yeah, because here's the story. We prepped actions for the bridge. We were pointing, we were shaking our
You
hips.
And your friend, this is?
Yeah, me and my friend, Kim. I obviously like a mic and a performance a little bit more than Kim because at the part, you know, where it's like, know that bit?
Yep.
Yeah. Our plan was to lean into the mic back to back and kind of like move our hands around and wiggle our bods.
Ooh, a little shoulder shimmy.
Yeah, a little shimmy.
Oh, God.
She left me hanging.
She left you out to dry.
Well and truly. So in this congregation of like all 90-year-olds,
who were just like, what is this music?
First of all, who is that person singing off key? Then I just like lean in and go for a full shimmy. Yep. Whoa. She didn't even sing the whoa. Oh. And I haven't been back.
No.
I haven't been back.
Kim, if you were out there, how dare you?
Savage.
I say. That is brutal.
I've never forgotten it, how she left me high and dry.
Yeah, but clearly.
But I full on committed then to the rest of the song. I was like, well, if you're not going to do it.
I'm here for it.
I'm here.
This is my moment.
And that's the passion I bring to ministry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. So, Steph, if you want me on the worship team here.
Steph Sterrett. We've now moved into an audition.
Available. Obviously, you've heard my amazing story of how I'm so good at worship. Mm. I can just bring the dance moves up the back.
There you go.
Yeah.
A little interpretive dance.
Yeah.
Listen, I knew asking this question that you would not disappoint. And no, thank you. That was amazing.
Maybe even on the gram we could get a little video going of the full routine. Like, I'm there for that. You can visualize, and people who don't listen to the podcast will be like, what is Jess doing?
I just love the fact that this experience has not deterred you in any way, shape or form. You're like, no, I will not be put down by this. I'm still willing. I have not learned any lesson. I'm still willing to go out there
The congregation
dance.
Loved it. They were bopping along.
Did they?
And for the Baptists, you need a little bit of
you need
fun
a little,
up the front.
For the Baptists.
just to let them loose a little bit, you know?
Oh, my days.
Yeah.
I loved every second of that. Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Well, I appreciate your vulnerability in that. Well, in a moment, we're going to be joined by Mark Rader, who preached during our online services this past Sunday. And Jess and I will be putting the big three questions to him as we dive deeper into the invitation from this week's sermon. Now, for those of you who missed it, Mark continued in our series, The Topography of Discipleship, Finding Our Way as the Church Today, exploring the fourth of the five contexts of discipleship, the social context, you and a team, you on mission. And you can listen to that message again through our regular GBC sermon podcast. But for now, Jess, I'm interested on your thoughts coming out of Mark's message on Sunday.
Look, I'm just stoked to have the hockey illustrations back.
Oh,
I was really missing them. I was lost in the wilderness. I didn't know where to turn.
There was no light at the end of the
tunnel. I just couldn't relate to the Bible. Mm. I didn't know what was going on. But now, oh, the clarity. The clarity. But in all seriousness, they were beautiful hockey illustrations. I just think it sounds like the most wholesome sport ever.
What are you talking about? The people, like, half of them are losing teeth. Like, wholesome sport.
Yeah, no, wholesome like, sport in that, like, they just accepted this new person onto their team.
That was lovely.
The supportive texts. And yeah. Just beautiful.
Surprisingly, I've never had that experience in a sports team where people have just accepted me. They're just like, oh gosh, it's Matt Willis. Don't give him the ball.
Yes, exactly. And then the other one where he points to the, like, the equipment guy.
Oh,
beautiful.
That was beautiful. Can confirm, beautiful. I actually watched that. I watched the video, the playback of that.
Is that what you posted on the Zoom?
Yeah.
I watched it too, but I didn't notice the pointing.
Just because it happened so quickly. It was such a beautiful
it
display.
It is beautiful.
Of
and then he turns around and he's like, you got this goal.
Okay.
It's like,
love it.
Beautiful.
But, just to bring it back to the original question, what anything of the actual sermon? Loved the illustrations, appreciated it. Actually thought that they worked very well for what Mark was talking about.
You're right. Yeah.
So, you know.
Yes. Here we go.
The message itself.
I love this whole concept, and I think it's easy for us in the PM congregation because what we're about 70 people each Sunday, like to see this very clearly playing out. And I think we're really working on it. I think we're going, whether it's just me that's now jumped on board and is aware of these things or whether the actual congregation is working towards this, I'm really vibing where this is going.
Yeah.
I especially resonated with because of my Bankstown Baptist days when I was a little teeny bopper.
Yeah.
When someone new comes in to a congregation of 30, like, you know they're new. And to me, it was more of like an inconvenience and an annoyance. Like, I'm a little posse of friends. Like, we're going to have to talk to people and mingle. So annoying.
So welcoming. Love that attitude. Love that heart.
But actually, if you change it to a focus on the mission of God, that they're just a really exciting resource to help with that.
Yeah.
And I definitely find that now I'm a bit more of like a vulture. If there's a new person who comes in, like, okay, what can you do?
Fresh blood.
Can you with me? Is that where we're at here?
Are you going to leave me hanging or are you going to do the shoulder bump as well?
Like, where can you fit into this journey and help us in our mission? And I really like that shift in mindset.
I really loved how, because I think like Mark spoke about, you know, how that focus and that sense of purpose of mission can really actually shape our experience of community.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I think we would all kind of go, yes, like I want community. And when Mark kind of explained and kind of unpacked for us how mission and a focus on mission can really, really help foster like a deep sense of community, I was like, oh, like I think we all just thought that like going out for coffee and ramen is the thing that's going to create community for us. But actually when we serve together and when we do mission together, like, yeah, I can get behind that. And it just kind of, it really clarified things for me about how significant the social context is for us with our discipleship, but also some of the byproducts of that sense of community. It's really exciting as well. Mm.
But obviously you wouldn't have gotten that clarity without the hockey illustrations.
No, I would have been lost in the wilderness, as you say.
Very good.
Well, I think it's time for us to start looking at the three big questions submitted through Slido this week. So, Jess, what are we going to be throwing readers' way today?
So question one is, how do we find our place in community if we feel called to a mission that exists outside of the local church?
Yeah, that's a big one.
This is good.
Yeah.
It doesn't heaps resonate with me because I feel very called into the church. Mm. But for those who are called outside, I think that's a really important question to
absolutely.
Answer. Question two, how do we create a culture for people to potentially fail as they seek to practice within the social context?
Yeah.
I'm ready for that. obviously, my previous story.
Would you say the WOO was a fail? I don't know.
No, it wasn't. It was not a fail. But potentially the worship leader asking me to sing on cue in a bit of a disgruntled way.
Mm.
Not really fostering.
Did that.
a nice environment.
Did that create a culture of practice? I don't know.
I do remember that comment clearly. And question three, how does the social context overlap with the other five contexts?
Yeah, awesome. So that's a question that we've been asking of each of the contexts, because I think it's important that we kind of look at how they interact with each other, because we don't want these to just be islands by themselves. Mm-hmm. We want them to work together. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, there's only one thing missing, and that's the man himself, the Reverend Dr. Mark Rader. Welcome, Rader, to the Big Three.
Thank you, Matt.
Reverend.
Reverend Doctor. Thank you, Jess.
No, I'm Reverend Doctor.
Get it right.
How you going? Yeah.
If you're going to use my titles, get them right. I'm pretty happy if you don't, but.
So, Mark, you've been in ministry for a hot minute, just for a short while. Mm-hmm. What kind of teams have you been a part of in the duration of your life in ministry?
Oh, okay. Probably I was part of kind of a smaller church, but they ran a camp for boys every year. I was I think 12 to 16-year-old boys. And that was probably the first team that I served on.
Yeah, right on.
So I was a camper for the first, until I was 16. And then I was involved in being one of the, I guess, the counselors or tent leaders, whatever the case might be. And that was probably the first experience of being part of a team and, contributing to the success of the week and all that kind of stuff. So that was good fun. Mm-hmm. And that kind of rolled into, kind of youth ministry stuff in particular. And then, being here at Gaimea for the last, 20 something years, it's been a team on staff, and I think that's been a real blessing. I know lots of pastors aren't in that position. It's themselves and one person or themselves and maybe two. But having, a fairly extensive team for the entire time I've been here has been a really, really great experience.
And you've had a few roles here at GBC as well.
I have.
As a youth pastor.
I did. I did the youth stuff, and then I moved into kind of broadly an associate role of some sort, which covered all sorts of stuff. And then gradually, once I started at Moreland College, my role kind of became kind of the teaching and preaching pastor, really. Before stepping into the senior role.
Yeah. A little bit of trivia just for everyone. Not that you want it, but I actually did an internship with Rader back in the day for preaching. He took me out to a whole bunch of random churches, put me up the front and made me, declare the name of Jesus, which...
I don't think I made you do anything.
He just stood at the back shaking his fists. It was really scary.
Rolling my eyes, shaking my head.
Let's say shaping and forming. It was formative years. Well, awesome. Well, I'm excited to talk about the social context. So let's get into the big three. I guess this whole series has been, we talk broadly, but we are kind of focusing in on how each of these contexts can apply within our church community here at GBC. Mm-hmm. And the social context raises, I think, an important question, which is, around the whole, well, what if my mission isn't necessarily here at GBC, and how does that then impact my involvement in community here at GBC? Because your message really kind of fused the two together. Mm-hmm. So to kick us off with the big three today, how do we find our place in community if we feel called to a mission that exists outside the local church? Mm.
Yeah, I think that there's probably two edges to that, I think. Mm. One, which is kind of the individual's responsibility, and one which is the church's responsibility. So I think, if you're involved in a ministry outside of your local church, that's great. Mm. Like, I'm not going to sit there and go, oh, I can't believe you chose to serve Jesus in some other way. that's not kind of GBC prescribed or whatever church you're a part of. But I think it does fall on the individual whose ministry lies outside to make sure that you are doing all that you can to be connected to the community that you worship amongst. Mm. And thankfully, community doesn't only reside in the social context, right? You develop that relational closeness in, you and a few. You develop that in you and a crew and a life group. I think you develop that a little bit, when we'll look at the last context of being even in a larger church context. Yep. Like you do get a sense of involvement and engagement. But I think it becomes really important that you see your ministry outside of the church as being connected to the mission of the church that you're a part of. Mm. Right. So, you know, here we kind of frame it up as we want to see lives changed by Jesus.
Yeah.
Right. We want to be people who, everywhere we're going and everything we do, invite everyone to follow Jesus. Well, if you're going to be involved in a ministry that's not connected organically or organizationally to GBC, I would love for you to be able to say that I am participating in the mission of God to restore and renew the world, to see lives changed by Jesus by being involved in this ministry.
Yeah.
Great. Because then there's a sense that you feel connected to what we're doing, what we feel God's inviting us to. You're using kind of our language, and like language shapes culture, and it kind of forms community. It kind of the in language, to speak. Yeah, yeah. And so then you feel connected to what we're doing. I think then from the church's perspective, from the organization or the institution of the church, I think there's probably two things that we need, and I'm talking, I guess, about GBC, but I think this would be true of lots of churches, that we need to do better. One of which is to be able to say to people who are serving outside of the church, how can we support you in your discipleship, right? And it runs that kind of fine line because, you know, for instance, I can't promote everything that everyone is involved in as if it's a ministry of the church. We'd run out of time. I think it gets really blurry about, like, are we supporting that for real? Is that a budget thing? All those sorts of things. So there's it's tricky in that space. But how do we as a community of faith say, how can we help you in that? Mm. You know, so in our life groups or in our, you know, in our, you know, you and a few, those intentional discipling groups, is there a way for us to make sure that we're helping people grow as disciples? You kind of wonder if there's value in having like a social group in terms of this context, a social context of more than 20 people who you gather together, and the only thing they have in common is they all serve in ministries that aren't part of the church.
Yeah.
I mean, that would first of all kind of go, oh, look, there's heaps of us who do stuff outside the church. But it would also mean that you could focus on discipleship in that context, even though you were working in different areas. So I think that's one thing. But I think the other thing, and I think this is a more critical component, is that too often nearly all of the church's ministries are internally focused. Like the easiest solution really is for the church to have more ministry that's externally focused, that's technically outside of the church, potentially resourced by and, spoken about and encouraged organizationally, but that's really focused externally. So that you don't just have to serve in, you know, the kids and youth ministry or the worship ministries or like the internally focused ministries, as valuable as those are. You know, and even kids and youth, more youth than kids, I suppose, is externally focused a little bit in the sense that people are, you know, often from a broader grouping than just, you know, the local church. But I think that becomes a really important part of the social context, right? And I think that, you know, in the book, again, Discipleship That Fits by Bobby Harrington and Alex Absalom, they define the social context a lot with mission. And what they mean by that is like engagement with the local community, really. And so there's something really valuable and I think really helpful and really challenging to consider as a church, how do we increase the number of externally focused externally focused ministries?
Yeah.
Now that might still mean that, you know, Jess is involved in some dance group apparently that's, you know, that's
and the drama club at Bankstown Baptist. I'd like to introduce one of those into GBC. We did skits before every sermon.
Great.
What a
time.
I see your face, Mark. You're not as enthusiastic as I hoped you would be, but that's okay.
That's right. Let me warm to it.
Everyone loves a skit.
That's right. That's right. Sure. You know, but if you have the opportunities then for people to be involved externally but also connected to the church, I think that makes it a little bit easier for people to be involved in ministries that are external, that are not connected to the church, you know, but that are still valuable and helpful, part of their passion or gifting or whatever the case might be. So I think those are the things I think I'd want to be focused on.
Yeah.
Making sure you're connected to a community of faith that's supporting you. And then I think, you know, from a church perspective, we need to be thinking about how can we support people? And how can we increase the amount of externally focused stuff so that more people are actually able to engage with things outside of, you know, internally focused ministries?
I guess, like, for me, and correct me if I'm wrong, I can't believe I'm saying that, but giving you that opportunity. Not that you need an invitation. But, like, so when we think community, because I guess that in my mind there are two – there are two communities in this space. There's being involved in the wider community of the local church, in this context, you know, GBC.
Yep.
But then, you know, that social context, we're talking 20 to 70, was it?
Yeah.
You know, that in and of itself is a community.
Yep.
So it seems that that focus on mission can probably tie you a lot more simply to that community within the social context, that 20 to 70 people. But I guess how and I guess you've spoken broadly, but is that the same as then being involved in the wider community of GBC or
I think one of the
different
I think they're different but they're related.
Yeah.
It's when you think about any group and the discipleship that fits, they base it all, I can't remember the author's name, but they base it on some research that links relationships and personal space, I think, if I remember correctly, right? So if you're really close friends with one or two other people, like you're much more comfortable with decreased personal space, right?
Unless you're Matt Willis, where you just have no respect for personal boundaries.
Right. That was a teaching moment. Yeah. I was kind of hoping you'd make the connection. But,
stop hugging me. It marks the line.
Do we have to use the same mic? We don't. And then like the less well you know people, the greater the distance between them. I think there's some value in kind of recognizing that there are communities nestled within communities.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, we're not a massive church, but when we're able to meet face to face, you know, in our morning service, we might have 150 people in the building. You can't know everybody, but you can still feel part of something because you recognize, oh, there's Matt and there's Jess and, oh, there's a couple I've never met before. But, so there's heaps of people I don't know, but I know enough people to kind of go, I feel comfortable here.
Yeah, yeah.
A life group, of course, you know everybody.
Yeah.
Right? There's only 10 of us. We meet every week, right? I know you really, really well. A discipling relationship, I know you really well and you know me really well. The social context is that I know all of you, like I know all of your names. Don't know many of you super well, but I know that we're all connected because, right, of the things that we do that we're focused on. And so I think that there are varying degrees, right? Like I know we're going to come to this question because we keep coming back to it, which is how does this relate to the other contexts? I think it does create, without answering that question, I think it does create a bit of a bridge community, shall we say.
Yeah.
It's the gap between a life group where you kind of go, I really know these 10 people well, and then showing up to church and kind of going, like, where are the other 9 people that I know? Right? You kind of, you know, you want to kind of go, I actually know 30 or 40 people here. Like, I know their names. They know my name. I could have a conversation with them without feeling too awkward.
Yeah.
So I think that we need to recognize that there are layers of community in that sense. That contribute to our sense of discipleship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important thing to say because I think community sometimes, particularly when it comes to church, we can sometimes have a really simplistic idea of what that looks like and a really but yet really rigid expectations about what it should look like. But I think what you're talking about is really helpful for us as we kind of step into a church community, broadly speaking, to understand that there are communities within communities within communities within the church.
Yeah.
And that your experience will differ depending on what layer you're interacting with.
Yeah.
And I think when we deconstruct that kind of really rigid expectation of what community should look like in the church and foster more this layering of community, it sets us up to actually experience the fullness of what community has to offer within the church, as opposed to coming in and going, well, I expected this. And we've all been there. Like, I was that person once upon a time, like, where I came in with my expectations. They weren't met and it was like, well, there's no community here. It's like, whoa, well, maybe you had expectations that were quite a deeper level of community. Yep. But you expected to experience them at
Yeah, or they were unrealistic for the group size.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Like I think we run into that sometimes where, again, and I think, you know, one of the sections of the book that really resonated for me out of this was that this is often the missing context.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, that's, I think for us, that's really quite true. Mm. Because we're big enough that it's hard to experience community if you only show up on Sundays.
Yeah.
Mm. Like it's just difficult. Mm. You know, you might have a great conversation with someone after in the atrium, but it's going to be pretty surface level.
Yeah.
Right. It's just kind of the way it is. And a life group is a little bit more intense. Mm. Right. And so I think people often want that in between. Mm. Where it's like, I know a bunch of people, I'm friends with them, they know me, mm. we can have those conversations. We can occasionally go a little bit deeper on them as well,
yep.
but it's not super intense. Mm. And I don't think we've done particularly well to foster that space. Yeah. Or, you know, I think as you said earlier, we confuse it with like just social gatherings.
Yep.
And you can get, I mean, that isn't not part of community.
Yeah. Right? Like
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's part of how you build community, mm. but it's not what we're focused on in terms of being discipling. Mm.
Oh, I feel like we could just talk about this for ages, but mm. let's move on to question two.
So again, as my story informed you all earlier in the podcast, I have made a few ministry errors in my lifetime. and even as it goes, especially with youth ministry, I mean, you start that most of the time straight out of high school, or I was in high school when I was leading primary school kids, and you really have no idea what's going on in your life. And you're just not a fully formed person. and so that's kind of a space where people learn and grow. And then mm. as they get further on in their years, they're like, oh, actually, maybe I am good at this now, where I certainly wasn't before. The poor little year six kids really suffered under my leadership. But at GBC, how do we create a culture for people to potentially fail as they seek to practice within the social context?
Mm.
Asking for a friend.
Well, okay. Yeah, I mean, I think your experience though, Jess, is so accurate and is actually a really helpful place to start because mm. nobody knows what they're doing when they start. Like mm. that's kind of the whole point, right? You know, you hear people often talk about the fraud complex or whatever, that the imposter complex, the whole idea that it's only a matter of time.
Well. I see you women. No, you shouldn't know it well.
The imposter complex.
Yeah, isn't it like a female thing? Like guys are like, whatever, I can do whatever the hell I can.
And no,
like,
I think that's the glass ceiling.
No. It's like guys will apply for jobs that they are fully not qualified for and women are like, oh, I don't have one of the criteria. I can't do it. You know,
no, I just feel like I've tricked everyone into thinking that I can do my job. Imposter complex.
Very good. All right, yeah, okay, carry on.
Yeah. Sorry, we're just having a moment here. That's just all right. A little bicker.
It's like, that's a women's
thing. Why won't you let me fail, Jess? Why won't you let me fail?
All right, you can have it too. Fine, I'll share.
We can all be imposters, okay? But that whole idea that, you know, you can end up feeling like, and I think with some truthfulness to it, it's like, I don't really know what I'm doing here. And I think we need to kind of recognize that that's not even how people start. It's often how people end up remaining, right? Mm-hmm. 'Cause you're always kind of experiencing new things where you're like, oh, I'm not really sure that I'm doing this quote unquote right or not. Now there are, you know, like you're on key or you're not on key. So there are some things.
Fine. The worship team is not my space.
Sometimes it's just fact.
But I think there's a handful of things, say, even out of that example. I mean, mm-hmm. I think you do want to create, how would I put it? You want to kind of create some safety nets. Mm. So young teen Jess Baker wants to join the worship team. They probably should have found out before rehearsal.
They knew I'd grown up with them. My dad was in the band.
And he didn't say anything either, did
they
he?
They knew.
Okay, gotcha. All right.
But carry on with your story as if they didn't know.
But like, you know, if there had been an audition process, you know, just to be able to say before you kind of get to rehearsal, when it's a little bit late to kind of go, oh, you can't sing, so maybe you should, you
can
know.
You stand up the back, away from the microphone.
Here's a tambourine.
I would have rocked that tambourine so hard.
You know, so I think you want to create a process for helping people discern. Mm. Because I think what that does is it tells us that it's okay not to be in this ministry or that ministry or whatever the case might be. It's okay to kind of go, yeah, I had a crack at it. I chatted to, you know, the team leader and the worship team, and, you know, that we sat down and I sang a bit, and they kind of asked me to do a few things. And in the end, we just kind of decided that's probably not right for me. That's fine.
That's so heavy.
Yeah. But the process then says it's okay not to, because instead of just kind of saying, if you show up, we'll find a place for you. And then you get the awkward moment when you're like, you know what? I know that I can't sing on key, but here I am anyways.
You're kind of hanging them out to dry a little bit in that situation. Yeah. Poor teenage Jess.
Yeah. So I think that there's process in that space. I think that we also like,
can I just jump in there? Because I think I think the process is a helpful tool. But there is something to be said that if you don't have the culture, then the process can be, as just said, it can be quite intimidating and quiet.
Yep.
Because I think if you don't have the culture established, then what a process can create is a culture of perfectionism and polish, right? And we talk about that a bit here at GBC. Because, you know, and rightfully so, like, you know, we have a bit of a reputation of doing things well, and I don't think that that's a bad thing. I don't think we should steer clear of that. But, you know, how do we kind of hold the two in balance? Because I think that's probably somewhere where, you know, the church, I'm talking big C, not just here at GBC, you know, where sometimes we falter. We either we exist at either end of the spectrum, where it's either the process is about, are you perfect? Because if you're not, see you later. Or you can go the other end.
And sure.
So how do you?
I mean, it feels to me like it's a little bit like, you know, I said on Sunday that we can make community the mission, right? And we kind of conflate the two together.
Yeah.
And we really need to keep them separate, right? That community, I think, stems from mission. And I think to some degree we can make excellence, which I think is a good thing. We can make excellence the mission. In which case, I think we need to separate those things again, right? And I think one of the things, you know, and this is I think one of my challenges personally. I kind of think processes, I think systems, but I sometimes forget the why. Right? And so the why needs to be, we have this audition process, if we're going to take the music team in. So we have this process, not necessarily to pursue excellence per se, as if that's the final goal. Like if we're excellent, then we've arrived. And if we're not excellent, then we haven't.
Yeah.
But instead to say that we want to pursue helping everyone find their place in God's mission.
Yeah.
You know, and we're willing to grow with people, and we're willing to take people who are raw or inexperienced or learning and growing and let them learn and grow. We don't have to be perfect. We want to find people who are on mission, but we want to help people find their spot. And so if people are passionate about something, they're just, they're not very good at it, to find a way to help them improve.
Yeah.
Right. Or to find a way to say, what else, where else can we help you kind of fit in? I think that becomes that the why becomes really quite important in that space. So I think that's, you know, kind of a second part of, I guess, the answer then. I think we need to really develop that why of, we want people to find their place in God's mission. And so we've developed some steps and processes to help that rather than being a little bit ad hoc, which is what we often are. It's like, hey, do you have a pulse? You're in. You know, which is, I'm not sure that's really helpful for anybody. I also think that we need to be clear about expectations, you know, in terms of what we expect from people. And again, you know, I think that there's a lot we can grow in this space. Clear about our expectations, and then clear about giving feedback. You know, because feedback's often a really frightening sort of thing. But if it becomes a normal part of culture, that's really helpful.
Yeah.
Because then we're talking about, you know, like one of our values is being lifelong learners. Okay, well, that means that I need feedback. If I don't get any feedback, I'm never going to grow because I'm not going to necessarily see where I need to develop.
Yeah.
Which I think a lot of the time feedback is tricky to navigate in the church because most people are volunteers and we're kind of just like rocking up and giving it our best go. But it is helpful for us to grow. Yeah,
but it means that you have to be upfront about that.
Yeah.
So Jess, you're starting in youth ministry. You're in late high school. You're speaking to your six kids. You don't have a lot of experience in this. What we expect is for you to be prepared. with something. So don't pull us together on Friday night at 5:30 when you're done work or whatever it is.
Matt's triggered by that.
Yeah.
I expect you to be prepared.
Yeah.
I expect you to talk for like no more than 12 minutes or whatever, like whatever the framework is. Want it to be out of a Bible passage. You know, like just like be really clear. And then I will give you some feedback on two areas. I'll give you feedback on your delivery, and I'll give you some feedback on your content. So you know right off the bat, okay, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And maybe you even sit in as I do that with Matt, who's also on the team. And so we talk through how he went. You're like, okay, that's not so scary.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. And that I'm not looking for perfection.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, hey, you know, Jess, that was great. You're in the Bible passage. You spoke for 10 minutes. You're obviously prepared. That was unreal. Here's two pieces of feedback. One, you know, you just look up a little bit more. So people kind of, you look at their eyes and see their eyes. So just, you maybe practice one or two more times. And if you could use another hockey illustration, that would be brilliant. You know, because that is my expectation. So, you know, but, you know, just something like that where it's like, and then to be able to say, do you know how to come up with illustrations? So there's some training rather than just kind of going, you know, go off and come up with some illustrations. Yeah. You're like, I don't know how to do that. So I think there's those sorts of things. And then I think finally we can learn to celebrate failure.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to, it's not that you failed that you're celebrating, right? It's that you had a go and now there's an opportunity to learn and kind of move forward. And I think that really helps. So I think, you know, how you do that, I mean, I think it's quite complicated. I remember being part of a evangelism conference basically with high school kids, and you know, you'd train them up, there'd be talks and apologetic training, and then you'd send them out to go like cold door knocking basically.
Oh, boom.
Horrific.
Yeah. Oh yeah, next
my
level.
My worst nightmare.
And then you'd come back and there'd be kind of like a big worship time and all that sort of stuff at night and speaker and whatnot.
That bit sounds fun.
Yeah,
it was. But we would often kind of, in the middle of it, we'd kind of have a, hey, so what happened out there today?
And you get a black eye.
Well, and there were a couple of years that I hosted it. And one of the things that I implemented in that was not only to hear the great stories about, oh yeah, like we ended up chatting to this guy in the park for 3 hours and came to faith, you know, which didn't happen very often, but occasionally it did. With also kind of just kind of saying, okay, who asked like 45 people to, if they wanted to do the survey, and nobody said yes. And inevitably there'd be a handful of hands. And just to kind of draw attention to that and say, you did what you like, you were faithful.
Yeah.
You did what you needed to do. We asked you to go and ask people if they'd be willing to have the conversation. It's not your job to make them willing. That's the work of the Spirit. And, you know, so let's just pray for the good things and the bad things. And that was a really helpful process of trying to set some culture around what was expected. It wasn't expected that you led someone to faith. It was expected that you had a bit of a go.
Yeah.
If God did something amazing, great. Let's celebrate that. If he didn't, that's all right. Like just, you know, dust yourself off and get back out there. And I think that was a really helpful way to kind of celebrate failure in a funny kind of way. And to, I suppose, reposition what failure is.
Yeah.
Failure is saying, oh, no one's going to talk to me, so I'm not going to ask. Which is very different than I asked and nobody said yes.
Yeah.
Very, very different. And so I think we need to kind of, you know, again, comes back to expectations. What does success look like? You know, what are we really looking for in success? Is it perfection? Hope not.
Yeah.
You know, is it clear though? Do people know? And I don't think we're very good at that sort of stuff. I don't think we're very good at that stuff at all. So.
It's just something for us to work on.
Yeah, well, and again, like, the social context, I think, is one of the most challenging for me. Like thinking about for us as a community of faith, because I don't think we've done it particularly well. I was comforted to realize that most churches don't.
Yeah,
you know, I was kind of like, oh good, it's not just us. Yeah, that's right.
There is a culture of failure out there. It's okay.
Yeah, that's right. So that was helpful.
Oh, well, I guess watch this space then.
I'll be up on the platform singing next week. That's what I took from that.
Well, before Jess joins the worship ministry, let's move on to question 3. So, Mark, to wrap us up for the big three today, we've been asking this question of each context, because I think it is an important one to consider each time we kind of reach a new context. But how does the social context overlap with the other five contexts?
The other four. The other four.
The other four contacts. Because there are five.
All of a sudden, we're coming up with six, and I'm like, I don't know the sixth.
You don't know the six.
Yeah, and I do think this is a really important question. I think let me just kind of lead off by reminding, you know, our listeners and even ourselves that we don't want this to be a burden. Hmm. You know, I don't want people to think to themselves that, oh, I've got to have all five going all the time.
Yeah, it's discipleship bingo.
Yeah, you know, but at the same time, to encourage people to be looking for these contexts because of what they can do to kind of generate our discipleship and help us grow. We've already talked briefly about, you know, I think the layering that this context provides. But I also believe that it's this place that's the engine room of real engagement with our wider social community, like our neighborhoods. Because a life group, I mean, you can invite someone to a life group, but chances are, like, it's going to be a little bit intimidating, particularly if someone doesn't have faith.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, and church can likewise be quite intimidating to someone who doesn't have faith. But if you're like, hey, there's 30 or 40 of us and we're engaged in serving our wider community, do you want to join us? Great. That's kind of it's almost an easy in.
Yeah.
In that space. And discipleship, while it's still on the menu, so to speak, is part of a much bigger thing. Like, you think about your time alone with God, that's kind of 100% discipleship stuff to some degree, right?
Yeah.
Here I am with God, you and a few. Discipleship is probably 90% of that if you're being really intentional, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we catch up and how was your week and how are things going and is your mom okay and blah, 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 blah. But we're focused on discipleship. A life group, you see, like, there's kind of not a decreasing emphasis on discipleship, but discipleship there's additional components to the relationship. The social context, I think, has kind of a nice balance of discipleship still being like, we're on mission, we're focused on what God's called us to do, we're practicing, which is a very different kind of feel, and anyone can kind of start in that process. And the sense of community, people can find their place there before they practice and before they're on mission. And so I think that kind of, again, I don't want to say decreased emphasis on discipleship, but the kind of the decreased role of discipleship in the social context, I think is a really open space for people to find their feet. You know, I'd like to think that those are the places where people who are who have begun to follow Jesus but haven't yet put their faith in him could actually go, I'm in. Like, I can engage in this ministry. I can actually be involved here and kind of find my feet. You know, like, to some degree, the worship ministry is kind of like that. You know, I think I'd want worship leaders who are people who had faith. But if we had someone who was starting out their journey of faith and they were like, you know, I play the piano, and we're like, hey, well, why don't you join? Where they could actually find a community.
Yeah.
And practice and kind of watch what it looks like to be on mission. Like, you just think, oh, that'd be really powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that there's a few places of obviously where you'd want people to be, you know, kind of committed in terms of their faith. But I think there's lots of spaces, particularly if you think about wider service opportunities in our community. You know, if we were doing a homework group for kids, which we've done in the past, do you have to be a believer to help a kid do math? No. So you could actually be part of something, you know, and it's part of a church. And so before all the kids arrive, the group kind of gathers and we're just going to pray and ask God to bless this time. And then we're just going to get stuck into math and English and history and geography and,
you know, and all the things.
And so they're like, okay, well, here I am and I'm part of this. So I guess I'll, you know, I just think there's some real opportunity there. So I think that's one of those places. I also think it means that it's easier to be outwardly focused when the church gathers together. Because if I feel like I'm part of a community in the social context, when I get to the public context, I don't need that to fill up my community bucket. Right, because I think what often happens for us is we come to church on Sunday. I know my life group. I only know 15 or other more people in the 150 who are here. So after the service, who am I talking to? I'm not talking to the new people.
Yeah.
I'm not talking to people who I recognize, but I can't remember their name. I'm talking to the people that I know. And we end up pursuing a sense of community in the public context that ends up closing us off to anyone who might be visiting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we're looking to fill up our community tank, right? Like I've got my 10 in my life group, but then, oh, here's this big group. I feel like I don't know anybody. Mm. Whereas if I knew 30 or 40 people, I'm like, hey, you know, I'll see you on Friday when we're doing youth together, Jess, or in the dance group or the drama club or whatever it is, you know, and I'll see you then. And that's great. We'll get to serve. I'm looking forward to that on Thursday night or whatever it is. But here, Sunday, can gather together, worship, be inspired. Oh, look, someone's new. Mm. You know, I've got more capacity in that space. So I think that that's another helpful place for it.
Yeah, because I think you're in a more secure position of where you see yourself
relationally in
the community to kind of venture out. Mm. But there's still an intentionality that needs to happen there because, you know, we can all kind of get in those cycles of, oh, but I just want to be here for the people that I want to be here with.
Yep.
So there's, which again is just an extension of being on mission and serving.
Yeah. I think it can help. I think you're right. Mm. You have to be intentional. You don't just kind of, hey, I'm part of a ministry group now, so I automatically start welcoming newcomers.
Yeah.
You know, like, if only it were that easy. So you're right. There is an intentionality around it. So, yeah. All right. What do you guys reckon about like how this context might feed the other contexts?
I think I'm hoping that you'll agree with me, Jess. I'm just going out on a limb here. But like I think our experience of being in youth ministry kind of demonstrates the strength of the social context. Because I look at the dynamic and the sense of team that, you know, we have in youth ministry. And, you know, obviously I've stepped out of that space. But, you know, I look back at last year and the sense of team that we had, particularly as we kind of walked through a really tricky season with the pandemic and all of that. And there really was that sense of camaraderie and community and, you know, we're here to do something together and that actually helps us get to know each other a lot better. Mm-hmm. Now, I think the unique thing about youth ministry is it's the same group of people week in, week out. We spend a lot of time together with Friday nights and camps and conferences and all sorts of things. So for me, like I know, you know, Mark, your reflection is, you know, it's an area that the church can do more in and that many churches kind of lack. But I think from my experience, youth ministry has really helped me see the value of this. And absolutely then feed into the other elements, these friendships, the relationships that you build when you serve with one another, you might find yourself in a life group with those people. You know, and I've got a couple of youth leaders who are in my life group now and we already have that established friendship and relationship, which really helps our life group dynamic as well. And, you know, I'll catch up with some of them one-on-one and we'll talk about that discipleship stuff. And, you know, it's just I can see how they all feed into each other. And I think it was like right on it when you said earlier in the podcast, it's the social context kind of provides the bridge. And I think I've really experienced that in the relationships that I've been able to form as I've served with a team and how that's, you know, some of them have kind of just flowed into other contexts and just deepened as well. And I've just heard a number of people kind of go, hey, I want to be involved in, like I wanted to, you know, this is my home and I wanted to be a part of this place. And so I serve. And I remember Jess, like when we sat down and did your interview to become a youth leader, like you said that you were like, well, this is my church. And so I'm going to serve because I want to get involved. I want to be a part of this community. And I really do see it as that bridge that allows you to do that. Because I think you're right on the money. Like if you put all those eggs in the public context, which we're going to be unpacking in a couple of weeks' time, which is your church gathering, it can be really hard to get deep into, like to get a relationship that you meet in the public context into the transparent context if it's only happening on Sunday. And serving with someone is a good bridge, as you said. I've seen it work. And I think the more we can kind of allow that to flow out into our culture here in at GBC more broadly. I think, you know, we're going to have a lot of people who the penny will drop for them.
Yep.
Because it's dropped for me a number of times in that context.
I do agree with you, Matt.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
yeah, I think you're only hurting yourself if you've only got your toes in one or two of the contexts. I think it's like, yeah, like you said, when I first joined GBC, I was like, I'm going to jump straight into a team. Because otherwise, this context is too intimidating. It's just a lot. You're just having small little chit chats with people on a Sunday, and that's just not enough to fill your tank. But again, in the same way, if you're only, you know, doing the life group context, then you come into the church context and you're just ignoring everyone else. So to feel safe and secure in your life group context, you've got great relationships with them and they know who you are. You can then, you know, do a little buddy system where you break out and talk to some new people. Yep. But the more kind of ministries you serve in, the more people you get to know and the more you feel like you're a part of this actually amazing ministry that's serving God.
Yeah. Love that.
I'm all for it.
Oh, we're here. We're sold.
I'm sold.
Sign us up. Worship team, here we come.
And it just means like if you're, you know, feeling on the outs, and I have that conversation with people all the time where they're just like, GBC is just not meeting my needs, or I feel like I'm on the outs, or I don't know enough people. Like, what are you doing? Jump into a crew. Even if it's just cooking on a Sunday night for dinner for the congregation, like you don't need to know Jesus at all to do that. But then you've got these amazing women and men in the kitchen you're talking to and making relationships with.
Yeah, I love that.
Well done.
I'm keen for it. Well, Raider, thanks so much for joining us for the Big Three today.
Pleasure.
So, Jessica Baker.
Matthew Willis.
That was, I thoroughly enjoyed that. Yes.
I also enjoyed it.
I'm glad. So what's kind of standing out for you after that conversation? Where's that leading your mind, your actions as we kind of go out into the week?
I think it's just something I'm really passionate about is like this joint ministry and mission in our church and that it helps relationships flourish. And like, again, like I said earlier, the most amazing part of this whole conversation, I think, is that it takes your, you know, it stops you being so selfish in your church community and just trying to draw from like, I'm coming because I want to listen to the sermon or I want to just talk to my few friends. And it completely makes it an outward act of like, no, this is the mission is coming on a Sunday and, you know, welcoming people and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I really love that idea of the layering of community and that each context actually provides a different entry point, but also a different experience of what community can look like. And I think that's an important conversation for us to be having and unpacking as, you know, followers of Jesus who are a part of this community. Because I think a clearer understanding of that will help us then experience it more. Because, you know, we're constantly saying we want community because we're built for it. We're absolutely built for it. And it's, you know, a reflection of God in us to have a desire for that. But sometimes we're not best positioned to experience it in its fullness. And I like, it's really come out quite strongly in the social context and but works in all of the five contexts, I think. So yeah, I'm keen on it.
Very good.
Well, thank you, my dear friend. You know, go well. I hope you... I hope to see you on worship this week.
And you will.
I have no doubt. It could be a little like couple pairing, like you and Jakey, like just up there.
Yeah. I'll get the little egg shaker. Yeah.
I want to put a poll up on Instagram and like I want the vote to go out and I want this to happen and you'd be forced onto a live stream to to the whole church.
I just think bring Take It All Back in general.
Yeah.
Just bring it back.
I mean, it was a banger.
It was a banger, clearly.
We were all there for it.
I'm sorry you had to hear me sing on the podcast.
It was a beautiful thing.
It won't happen again.
All right, my friend, I'll see you later. Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure that you're there at one of our online services this Sunday and that you snap the Slido QR code before the sermon to get involved. If you've enjoyed the Big Three podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.